Members, we're going to begin. We are at quorum, and one of the first things I want to do is approve our minutes. And we actually reapproved our minutes yesterday when we did the approval of the minutes. We approved February 11th, so those minutes should be doubly good and solid. I challenge anyone in the legislature to challenge our veracity with those minutes. Nonetheless, we do need to approve the minutes of February 12th to February 17th. I'm wondering, Representative Brainerd, if you would so make a motion.
I move approval of the minutes from February 12th and February 17th.
Thank you. There's a motion to approve the minutes of the 12th and the 17th of February. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Today we have two bills. House File 314, compulsory attendance age increased to 18. And House File 439, statewide academic standards required for physical education. Members, these bills, for some of you, may look familiar because we've dealt with this issue over the last, at least the last couple of years. But nonetheless, I hope we'll have some good discussion on these bills. Our hope is to move both of these bills forward, if you're so willing, and to forward them on to the K-12 Finance Committee. So we're going to begin with House File 314, which is my bill, and I'm going to ask Representative Cass to take over the gavel here.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, yes. I would like to move House File 314 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee.
Representative Mariani moves that HF 314 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with a further recommendation to be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Division. Representative Mariani has an author's amendment to HF 314 labeled DE1. Which you all should have in your packet. The chair moves the adoption of the DE1 amendment to put the bill in the form the author intends.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I think we need to vote on that motion. That will put the bill in the form that I wish it to have it before the committee.
Yes, it is the intention to put the bill in the author's form. Any discussion on the DE1 amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Mariana, go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to just give you some quick thoughts and walk very quickly through the bill, and then I'm going to ask my testifiers to come down and speak to the committee about the need and the importance of the bill. As you all know, each state has a compulsory school age law that sets both the conditions and the minimum age for mandatory enrollment into the public K-12 schools, and similarly for exiting our public schools. Minnesota currently sets the upper compulsory age at 16. There are, I believe, 12 states in total that have set that 16 exit age. And by the way, our law also requires, it isn't just, you know, your need to stay enrolled in our K-12 schools until that age. Our law also allows for you to be able to exit if you meet the high school graduation requirements. There are 20 other states that set the upper compulsory age at 18. There seems to be a bit of a trend, I think, across the nation to move us state by state toward that 18 level. Iowa, most recently, our counterpart house in Iowa passed they're currently 16, they passed an 18 age, compulsory age through their House of Representatives. Our border, two of our border states, Wisconsin and South Dakota, both have both peg that age at 18. North Dakota's currently, I think, at 16. We have 8 states that set it at 17, and then we have 2 states that allow local education agencies to set the upper compulsory age. Excuse me. This bill, as I said, would move our state's upper compulsory age to 18. And by now, all of you know that that there's a strong connection, of course, between education and very important economic and social healthy success indicators. High school graduates can expect to earn on meeting about $10,000 more a year in wages than a high school dropout. That mean annual income rises with post-secondary educational credentials, and of course, you can't get to post-secondary unless you go through that diploma, high school diploma stage. Excuse me. There are also strong social indicators that are at very least statistically tied to earning a high school diploma. Dropouts are disproportionately found among our inmates in our prison systems across our nation. And high school dropouts also tend to report higher health problems than their counterparts who have been able to move forward with the diploma and beyond. We've long discouraged high school dropouts. Even with our age 18, we've made efforts both at school district levels, at state levels, to create programs, incentives, even just rhetoric in terms of discouraging dropping out. That's been a long tradition of ours. But there's some huge demographic shifts that are happening in our state. We have the globalization of our economy. We have the development of a modern economy that's increasingly dependent on high academic and social skills. And all that, when you add it up together, I believe means that we really do need to maximize the abilities of every single student who's enrolled in our K-12 schools. And so perhaps this notion that at one time fit a different era for us, that, not that we were encouraging dropping out, but perhaps at one time that worked, with easy transition into sort of low-skill manufacturing jobs that pay the living wage. That era is really pretty much beyond us now. So raising the age at which one can leave high school alone won't get us to where we need to be. I believe our schools need to do more, need to increasingly step up their efforts to provide learning environments that can appeal to would-be dropouts and that can serve as real powerful counterweights to the forces, sometimes tragic forces, that manifest themselves in the lives of young people that lead to dropping out. But our state and our schools should really match our rhetoric and our legislation, our trend in legislation toward higher and higher standards, with an unambiguous expectation of our young to stay in school, to get a diploma, and to position themselves for post-secondary education, at the very least to be ready to avail themselves of that opportunity. So I believe that we can no longer have such a low bar for dropping out of high school. If we truly care about our young, and if we truly want to stay to still the high school citizens, then I would encourage you to adopt this provision. The bill, quite simply, and the lead-off language before you, quite simply, adjust that upper mandatory exit age to 18. It would, there are some technical fixes then that we need to do to the statute. We put this out into the next biennium, 2012 and 2013, and it has mostly to do with fiscal implications for the current biennium. If this bill is successful, we'll vet that out in Representative Greiling's committee. We'll need to do some language changes here that then align our habitual truancy laws to reflect the 18 mandatory age. We have some language where we need to do some adjustment to reports to superintendents that gets us into a whole other area that has to do with homeschooling. homeschooling. Homeschools need to file reports with superintendents, and currently those are pegged to age 7 and 16. I really want to take this one step at a time, and so I just want to leave that as is for homeschools, and really just focus on our main K-12 public schools. So we're going to be clear that if you're homeschooling 17 and 18, you don't need to file a report with the superintendent. And then we have some repealer language that allows for withdrawal from school for students, tied to the current age 16 level. So it's a pretty simple bill, pretty straightforward. And Mr. Chair, with that, I'm going to ask our testifiers, Maria Kasarsen, Pam Nolan, and I believe Bernadia Johnson as well, to come forward and offer their testimony at this time.
Thank you. Yeah, if we can have all three testifiers come down, please state your name and your connection to the bill. And we open to testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Maria Karstarfen, and I'm the superintendent of St. Paul Public Schools. I'm pleased to be here today to encourage you to extend the mandatory school age from 16 to 18. As many of you know, our district serves a very diverse population, reflecting more than 70 languages and dialects. Daily, more than 38,000 students arrive to our 65 schools with an array of educational experiences and skills. Regardless of a student's preparation for school, our job is to raise the bar on learning for all students and educate our kids for success. We want to encourage our students to graduate to something great. In order to do that, they must finish school. To that end, I ask you to change Minnesota's current mandatory school attendance age from 16 to 18. We must get serious about high school completion and remove systemic barriers that stand in the way, such as an antiquated policy or law designed to support education during an agrarian age. Not for education today, when we expect all students to graduate to high standards and to have successful careers and success in college. How can we expect students to graduate to high standards when we do not even expect them to stay in school through the typical graduation age? Our most recent data from 2008 shows that for a four-year completion rate, 62% of our students graduate in 4 years. 22% are continuing high school, taking more than a year, 4 years, and about 11% drop out. Our strategic plan target for the four-year dropout rate was 9.9% as we get closer to 0%, but our actual performance was at 11.3%. Over a two-year period from fall 2006 to spring 2008, 465 students notified the district. I mean, they told us that they were leaving at the ages of 16 and 17. That is over 230 students each year. We lost another 1,000 across the state during the same time period. 151 of the students were 16 when they dropped out, and 314 were 17 when they dropped out. Furthermore, we have a disparity with our graduation rates. Only 61% of American Indian students, 64% of Latinos, and 76% of Black students graduated from St. Paul Public Schools in 2007 using our adequate yearly progress measure. We must free up schools to do what they do best, educate our students. Minnesota is one of about 20 states that still has a low mandatory attendance age, and our students know that the current law is on their side when it comes to dropping out. In the United States, only a few more than half of African American and Latino students graduate from high school on time. In addition, only 12 to 14% graduate having met the requirements to attend a state university. And that was a study done by Stanford just 2 years ago. Those who don't graduate from high school face a lifetime of disadvantage, earning an average of $9,200 less per year than high school graduates and more than $1 million less than college graduates. Most sobering is research from the Alliance for Excellent Education. Graduation rates are a fundamental indicator of whether or not the nation's public school system is doing what it's intended to do, enroll, engage, and educate youth to be productive members of society. In today's increasingly competitive global economy, graduating from high school is more critical than ever to securing a good job and a promising future. Dropouts earn less and experience a poorer quality of life than those who graduate. But these individuals themselves are not the only ones who suffer. There are significant costs to communities and states in which they live, as well as society at large. According to the Alliance, each year nearly 14,900 students in Minnesota do not graduate with their peers. The lost lifetime earnings in Minnesota for that class of dropouts alone totals nearly $4 billion. Minnesota could save more than $224 million in health care costs over the course of a lifetime for each of the class of dropouts as they earned their diplomas. Minnesota households would have more than $829 million more in accumulated wealth if all the heads of households had graduated from high school. More than $1.3 billion would be added to Minnesota's economy by 2020 if students of color graduated at the same rates as white students. If Minnesota's high schools graduated all students ready for college, the state would save more than $89 million a year in community college remediation costs and lost earnings. Minnesota's economy would see a combination of savings and revenue of more than $77 million in reduced crime spending and increased earnings each year if the male high school graduation rate increased by just 5%. When kids drop out, everyone loses. Students, families, taxpayers, residents. This is more than education, although from the perspective of the student, of a superintendent, it's all about education. But for our state, it's more than education. It's really about a quality of life for students who drop out and for the communities in which they live. Thank you for your interest in this issue and for your commitment to the children of Minnesota. I hope that you'll change the dropout age from 16 to 18. Good morning, Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, and members of the committee. My name is Bernadia Johnson. I'm the Deputy Superintendent for the Minneapolis Public Schools. And I'm here today to speak in favor of House File 314, an act to increase the compulsory age, attendance age to 18. Enacting this bill to increase the compulsory age of attendance from 16 to 18 supports us in our mission to ensure all students learn and graduate from high school prepared for college and work, and prepare to participate and lead our future democracy. This proposal is not a silver bullet solution, as there are other key strategies that must be in place to support student retention. However, it is a critical strategy to help us constructively re-engage our students who have made a decision not to remain in school. We know that high school completion is widely acknowledged as the minimum entry requirement for higher education and ultimately well-paid employment. For our economy to recover, we need to increase the quality and quantity of our graduates. An educated workforce has to be viewed as the best way to stimulate the economy and to grow jobs. Our global economy will demand a highly trained and diverse workforce. I believe that diversity that we want and need can be found in our current schools. More students in schools means fewer students engaged in risky behaviors that create further challenges to our communities and to our limited resources. More students of African American, Hispanic, and American Indian backgrounds drop out than other groups of students and subsequently even have less opportunities to be successful. We want to encourage these students to stay in school as long as we can to provide them with the skills and tools necessary to compete later in life. Many students at age 16 are just too immature or don't fully understand the consequences of dropping out of school at an early age. Many times these students return when they are 18, 19, and yes, even into their 40s, wishing they had made another choice. It is not until later that they see more clearly the consequences of not staying in school. If you ever have the opportunity, I encourage you to attend a graduation, an adult basic education graduation. It is probably one of the most moving experiences I've ever had when you hear adults come back and wish and hope that we would do better for other students and they talk about the importance of having a high school diploma and acquiring skills for employment. But they also talk about the need to have it to be advanced, to have advancement on their own jobs. We have an opportunity here, and we have a responsibility to make a difference by increasing the compulsory age to age 18. It is important because raising the age to 18 sends a strong message that we are serious about school in Minnesota and that high school diploma means something. Raising the age to 18 gives every student the same expectation of graduation regardless of circumstance that sets the bar even higher than we prepare all students to be college and workforce ready. And it's for no other reason. Our children deserve the society in which the adults are willing to stand up and not let children decide what is best for them, and to set clear and high expectations and say no to failure. I appreciate your support for this measure, our work, and success of our students. I would be happy to answer any questions after our last speaker. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Pam Nolan. I'm an assistant Ramsey County attorney. And for the last 8 years, it has been my sole responsibility to enforce the compulsory school attendance law for children and families who live in Ramsey County. I have to tell you that this has been one of the greatest passions for me as an attorney, to work in an area that provides so much satisfaction and reward for the kids who actually succeed. I ask that you support this bill, House File 314, and raise the compulsory school attendance age to 18. While I have devoted the last 8 years to primarily enforcing school attendance for kids in elementary school, I also have a great familiarity with the students who are in the higher grades. I can tell you that over the course of the last 8 years, I have had over 9,000 students referred to my office for school attendance problems between the grades of K through 6. And what we do in K through 6 is critical to what happens in 7 through 12. Depending on the experience a child has in those years is extremely a high predictor of how well 7 through 12 will go. Letting kids leave school at the age of 16 when they are perhaps sophomores or juniors in high school does in fact send the wrong message. We have a state that is strong on the value of education by supporting it financially, not only in K through 12, but also in early education. I believe having a law that permits students to leave at 16 indicates a different message. Our office has been strongly involved in supporting and enforcing the compulsory school attendance law beginning in 1995. And we pushed very hard for the law change when it moved from parental approval at 16 and 17 to withdraw. We definitely support eliminating that and moving the compulsory school attendance age all the way to 18 with no ability for a child to leave school at 16. And our office wholeheartedly supports the enforcement of holding those kids and those parents responsible for those ages, as we do all other parents and kids at this time who are younger than that. I would like to take you on just a little ride here, a short ride of a student who starts school in kindergarten. And I think it will help to understand how kids get to the dropout stage in the first place. Because it begins in kindergarten, that first experience, and how well their parents get them there every day, on time, to school. What their experience is begins that very first day of school. I unfortunately see a lot of students who don't have the ability to be in school every day for a variety of reasons. And over the course of time, you see the school attachment those children have begin to change. And the problems these kids begin to experience, I can tell you, are lifelong. My office is also responsible for prosecuting any juvenile defenders, and unfortunately, many of them do come to us with school attendance problems. But what happens with the students that are referred to my office that I see not only in initial informational sessions but in diversion hearings and then sometimes in court is that falling behind your peers in school becomes one of the most difficult things for a student to have to deal with. These students, and I'm not an educator, but From my exposure to the parents, educators, and students that I've worked with, developing a difficulty in learning causes school to become a very difficult place for them to be. I always tell families that every day a student's instruction in the classroom is building on the previous day. And when you have a lot of missed attendance days, then that building becomes difficult. Specific curriculums every year require students to master one to move to the next. So mastering kindergarten does count when it comes to mastering first grade. And mastering senior high, 12th grade, in order to get that diploma, means you've mastered all the grades before that. So it's a 13-year process, not something that begins in your 9th or 10th grade year. Social issues that erupt for students who do, become disconnected with school are the loss of interest, the dislike of school, and behavior problems. And we see those behavior problems in my office not only within the school, but also in the community that bring those students into the juvenile delinquency system. So it seems to make an awful lot of sense that we put our investment, financial investment and all other kinds of investments, in keeping those kids in school and keeping them attached, learning, wanting to be successful, as opposed to in our delinquency system for the kids who have become detached. They'll find school a useful place for them to be and end up, you know, potentially in a lot of years of crime. Right now we know that, and this is somewhat old data, that over 70% of the people in our nation's prisons never finished high school. And we know that for every single year that a student completes in secondary education, it reduces their chance of welfare dependence by 30%. Our students who drop out of school are usually unemployed, underemployed, or unemployable, and dependent upon either our welfare system or parents or other family members to support them, or crime. Some of them turn to crime to support themselves. Getting that high school diploma is absolutely necessary for our students, and we need this committee to support this bill in order to move in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you to our testifiers. Before we move on to questions from members, we do have one technical amendment that I will ask Lisa Larson from House Research to give us.
Members, on your document H0314DE1 on page 2, we need to make a minor correction. On page 2, line 10, reinstate the stricken comma, delete or, and on page 2, line 11, reinstate the stricken words or high school so that the phrase reads, if the child is in middle school, junior high school, or high school.
Representative Mariana, would you like to move the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would move the amendment as explained by Ms. Larson, which I believe is to reinstate the stricken language on 2.11 or high school, and I think also technically on 2.10 to reinsert the comma. That's pretty good for...
Yes. Any questions from members? Discussion? Those in favor of the oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Oral amendment passes. The bill is in format. We have a series of questions here, and we'll start with Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, my question had to do with the change we just made. I was curious about how that was working. It appeared that we were not requiring... Well, never mind. That's what it had to do with, so thank you.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have several questions, and I'll try to group them all together as one. I appreciate what you're trying to do. I think that this is great, and I certainly agree with what the intent is here. I have, though, discussed with some students that have dropped out of school, several of them I coached in Little League Baseball, and so I know them pretty well. One of them now at age 22 is actually making more money than we are as representatives, which... either says something about his ability to work or something else, but that's besides the point. And when I talked to him about why he dropped out of school, it was because he said, there's nothing there for me. I'm bored to death. And, you know, he said, I used to be able to take some technical classes, some carpenter classes and things like that, which I enjoyed, but because of cuts in schools, they haven't been able to provide those classes anymore. And so I'm curious if this is really the best way to go about this, or if there's a better way to do it. And so I'm curious to know how this is working in other states that have raised this to 18. And I'm also curious to know, how will this be enforced? When I've talked to superintendents about truancy, they've already said, we have a problem enforcing it already. It's almost impossible to enforce, is what they've said. And so now we're just going to open it up to, you know, a whole bunch more students or to try to enforce this for. And so there's a whole bunch of questions and comments there, and you can respond to them however you like.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, they're all very excellent questions, and Representative Fowles, I've had those same experiences too over time. I think we can certainly, perhaps Ms. Nolan can speak on some of the enforcement issues, and then Ms. Johnson and Ms. Kostarfin can address some of the other issues. But I think part of this is, for me, you know, what they're asking for, and I think what we're asking them, is actually expecting, you know, some higher level dynamics, if you will. And that's not to say that our school districts are not quality places, but I think some newer and higher level dynamics in terms of ensuring that they modernize their learning environment so that, in fact, they can continue to be good and relevant places for the excellent example that you gave. In my case, it was a young 16-year-old Chicana woman who just felt that she just didn't want to be around kids anymore. You know, she felt older. She did go on to get her GED and was successful with that. But it seems to me there's so many other doors that could be possible and open to her if she was able to stay in a structured, guided, you know, well-resourced educational environment that can open up many more doors than she was able to do so by herself. And I think that's really what we're asking our schools to do, and I think that's what these school districts are asking, are trying to do, and asking that we set those expectations on them. But I'll let them speak for themselves.
Thank you. I can answer perhaps part of your question with respect to enforcement. We already have a machine in place in the Ramsey County Attorney's Office for enforcing compulsory school attendance between the grades of K through the age of 16 right now. And for us to enforce compulsory school attendance for kids who are 16 and 17 would simply be by folding them into the process and the machine that we already have up and running. This would perhaps result in higher caseloads for probation officers who supervise and monitor kids who enter the juvenile court system under a petition for truancy. But they also might have those kids on their caseloads if they leave school at 16 or 17 for matters that involve the juvenile delinquency system. So it could be, you know, counting the same numbers in different piles. But our enforcement machine is up and running, as I would expect it is in all counties across the state of Minnesota have a responsibility to enforce this law. Whether it be 16 or 18, there has to be a process in place for doing that.
I wanted to speak to the question about the students and the lack of engagement and having courses that students would be interested in. I know that one of the things we're trying to do in Minneapolis is find ways of connecting with students earlier. We had a summer camp this past year for our eighth graders that were transitioning to high school as a way of connecting our students to their teachers that they would have, and as well as connecting them earlier to any opportunities in high school and past that. We have college and career centers where we understand that students need to get in and learn what is available to them past high school. And we're working with them on what's called the My Life Plan, where we started back in actually sixth grade now, to have students start to at least connect around the school experience and experience outside of school. But I think what's really important is, in my testimony, I know Maria would say the same thing, is that this is just one of the strategies. We know that it's important to get students to reading. We need to have them in algebra by the eighth grade. And we also know that we have to have courses that not only interest students, but also prepare them for post-secondary. And we're always working and interested in doing that. And when I think about what the alternatives are, when you see students who have dropped out, and we see what's happening in our community, I believe that this is a necessary step.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This probably is for the author, I guess.
Will this change have any impact on the alternative learning centers at all as far as the ability to kind of change from the traditional school into the alternative? Will that process change or need to be changed? Or because that is the option that students that drop out today do have.
Representative Mariani.
I don't think there is any change, but I don't know enough about the structure and relationship between the alternatives and our regular students.
Maria could talk about St. Paul, but in Minneapolis, our students go through our placement center and enroll in our alternative learning environment. And we are currently starting to look at new school options for students. And I think one of the arguments that I've heard is that these students don't want to be in school and they have a hard time in our high schools, so where would they go? Then I think then the onus is on us as a K-12 institution to identify learning communities that these students will be successful in. And so whether that's through the alternative learning community or through a new school option that we are working to identify in Minneapolis, that would be a strategy to capturing the students as well.
So, Mr. Chair,
yes.
So it would require the student be in school somewhere, somehow, until age 18 or until they complete the requirements to graduate. Okay. And right now, there is no, assuming someone is advanced, I mean, they can graduate at age 16 or 17 if they have completed all the necessary requirements, right? I don't know how often that happens, but you have to, as we're trying to get kids and students interested, maybe we ought to inspire them by saying, if you work harder, you can get out of here faster.
Well, and Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo has an interesting proposal related to that. But my understanding of the law is that that's currently a law, so we would not change that that particular requirement.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Superintendent Karsharfin and Ms. Johnson, could you tell me again what the number of dropouts are in Minneapolis and St. Paul? I'm trying to square that with, I'm looking at a copy of last year's fiscal note, and it doesn't seem to square with what you said with the number of students calculated for the fiscal note.
Right.
And this year's fiscal note, okay.
Well, I did a, you know, we have to kind of wait for our data to see what happened, so I took the last 2 years of data that we could confirm. Mm-hmm. And so that takes us from 2006 to spring of 2008. And then when I get the 2009 numbers, you know, mm-hmm. we can update it. But we had 465 students notify our district, and this is not dropout. These are kids who are dropping out at age 16 and 17. So I'm going to break it down. For that period, 465 notified that they were leaving the district. So you could just split that, 230 a year, all right? I did go, and then I'll go to what we call the four-year completion rate and our dropout rate. So 11.3% of our students, based on our four-year completion rate, dropped out of school. And our target in reducing it was at around 9%. And so we could get to zero, you know, hopefully by the end of No Child Left Behind. But it was around 11%. And in real numbers, I think I had that. It's about 296 kids.
Thank you.
Representative Marianne?
Mr. Chair, could I get the answer from Minneapolis, too?
Yes.
Representative Graylin, what I would like to do is get that information to you. I apologize. I'm running out of the office to get here. I left that. But I will tell you, we have about 1,600 students that we can account for each year. And the percentage of those that notify us that they're dropping out at age 16 is about 4.1%. So I'll get the other detailed information to you later.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, it's conferring with GOP staff here, and she pointed out that some discrepancies may occur because of the way we count or don't count those who just simply disappear. Mm-hmm. And we heard that testimony in your committee a couple weeks ago, and I was stunned that there are large numbers that we just don't know. And so there is a process where people can notify. I think Superintendent Kasarfin cited numbers of students who actually formally went through the process of notifying. And so I think that the discrepancies have to do with how the pistol note either counts those who are formally going through that process and projecting out of that as opposed to simply disappearing, which we just don't have enough data about what drives that.
All right, we would like to move along with this bill as we do have another one to hear from, so if we can be pretty brief in our questioning. Representative Depke.
I'll be as brief as possible. I had actually three questions. First of all, Superintendent Kasarfin, I just want to say that I have only the highest respect for you. You gave a testimony in this committee a few weeks ago that I thought was outstanding.
Well, thank you.
But I do want to ask you a couple of questions. we talked about the dropout rates per year. Do we do any kind of an exit interview with students? And I know that that's primarily a business terminology, but in your opinion, what is the number one reason that these 200 students that you've talked to are dropping out? Thank you for your question. The first thing is we can look at national research and then we look at our own students. And I think it's fair to say that we don't necessarily do what you described on an exit interview. So I think that as we move forward, should this bill move through, that these would be things as we continue to do testimony that, you know, we would want to set up and be able to provide each year. But research says that, you know, there's a tapestry of reasons. But they do cite things like we heard before, you know, I don't feel engaged in school. I don't feel like people care whether or not I come or go. It's a very sort of a qualitative, emotional response to the school experience. I told this story before, but I will tell it again. We were in an elementary school with a fourth grader who, when asked, you know, said, you know, well, where are you going to go to college? I said, I'm not going to college. I'm dropping out when I'm 16 now. My brother dropped out from St. Paul Public, you know, dropped out from school at 16. So, yes, we own that we need to do more to engage students in school, have them feel safe, welcome, respected, have them want to come, continue with extracurricular and all those other things that make the school experience whole. And at the same time, again, if we want to break the cycle of poverty and those sorts of things that tend to continue to stir in certain communities with certain demographic, you know, tags, that you find that these are things that they witness, our kids witness early on, based on family behaviors and other things, they know that they can drop out. And I can honestly say, I've had students say to me that I can drop out at 16. I mean, I will drop out at 16 because I can. And that's the piece that is, there's nothing about that I think should inspire any of us. If they know they can do it, then they certainly bring forward that as an option in their life. I don't deny that we should dig more into the issue, but at the same time, I would also say that there's a lot of additional research that shows that kids as early as the sixth grade have determined that they are not college bound. And because they already have that self-determination based on many other symbolic and I'm going to say institutional barriers that we put forward, they're not stupid. They get it. They know when we have low expectations of them, and they will live down to that. And when we have high expectations, students can live up to that. And I say we do the live up a little bit more. And finally, I would just say that, you know, we send a different message to our entire country. We say, you're not mature enough to drink until you're 21. You're not mature enough to choose the leadership of this country until you're 18. But we're going to tell them they're mature enough to forever alter their future for earnings, for, you know, for opportunity and everything else at 16.
you know, if we send a very different message on the other side around their educational attainment. And so I just say, well, we're all I'm recommending we do is that we raise the bar on expectations and standards, just like we do for drinking or voting, that they cannot drop out of school until they are mature enough to make that decision about their life. And in the meantime, we should do our part. Help them be engaged, welcome, respected in school, and support them to our other partners when they're having trouble, truancy and those sorts of things.
Deputy Superintendent Johnson, do you have anything to add about exit interviews, briefly?
We don't do exit interviews, but what we have done is call families. When people leave our schools, we call and say, why did you leave? And trying to understand, and Maria listed some of the reasons that nationally that people would say they leave, and I would concur from our phone calls. We called over winter break because we know that's a time when students don't come back. But it's not just a dropout, it's just students who disappear. And we hear various things, you know, I have to go to work, we hear they're not engaged. And early students start to engage in these risky behaviors that we've talked about here today, and there's other pulls. And we need to do a better job of pulling them back into school and keeping them there.
Thank you. Representative Dietrich.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to share an experience that I had on this topic. And it was when I was chairing the High School Redesign Committee. And I had listened to some seminars from Penn State on high school redesign quite intensely. And this story intrigued me enough to actually remember it. So I just want to share it because I think it's very relevant to what we're talking about here today. And the topic was high school dropout and why people drop out. In other words, why do they exit, that type of thing. And they the speaker at that seminar said that the kids who drop out, you know, and I'm talking obviously very general information, the kids who drop out are disenfranchised. They're disenchanted with school in the elementary and middle school years. And they get to the end of their middle school experience and they think, high school, that's going to be different. I'll give it a try. I'll go there. I'll see how it works. And they go there and they realize that it is no different than what they just left. And so they do drop out. And what they have found is that they needed to provide a different environment for those kids. So what they have taken is some sort of a wing or a campus at a community college, and that's where they have their dropout scope. And the staff that is there are, you know, very much trained and tailored to work with those dropout kids, and they understand their needs. But yet it gave them something different. It's a different environment. It's a different culture, and they feel like they are almost at college in a totally different experience, and they have been very successful at engaging those kids. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hopefully this can be a brief question. I think this is for Representative Mariani. I'm curious if there's been any testimony or direct input from the Department of Education and maybe where they're coming down on this particular question.
Representative Mariani.
Chair, now they have not had a conversation with the department about this, and I'm trying to recall the last time we put this forward where they were at, and I'm not recalling it. We will certainly have more opportunities if this is successful in the subsequent committee to be able to do that.
Final question from Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for our two superintendents here, just kind of almost a follow-up of Representative Jeffy's question. I guess I'm wondering if, in the exit interviews or what you know about the kids who are dropping out, is it generally with their family support or blessing, or really flies in the face of what their parents would like them to do? Because I guess, kids' academic achievement, I believe, is also strongly tied to their family structure and the importance of education and finishing your education. And if that support isn't there from the parents, I'm wondering if we can really make an impact with changing the law and what your experience has been.
You know, the phone calls that we've made, we've talked to the families and we've talked to some of the students, and I guess I can't respond specifically to that. We know that families' involvement is really critical and important to this. I guess I would say that I believe that just the way I approach this work, that families want the best for their students and their children, and if at all possible, they would want their child to have a college education, because if you, college education, that's just part of two, a high school diploma, because if you attend the graduations and you see the first time a high school graduate and how families respond to that, is unbelievable. Suddenly people know how important it is. I just feel like when students start to have risky behaviors, for example, I think parents are overwhelmed with that, just like we are at school, and so they need some other support from other agencies and organizations to assist with that.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on House File 314? Seeing none, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, then Representative Mariani would like to renew his recommendation in House File 314, be recommended to pass as amended.
Okay.
As amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with a further recommendation to be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Division. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
No, that's all right.
Thank you, members. Next, we have Representative Norton's bill. I'm trying to find a number here. House File 434.
439, Mr. Chair.
House File 439. Okay. Representative Norton moves the House File 439 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a re-referral to the K-12 Finance Committee. And Representative Norton, you don't have any amendments at this point, is that correct?
I do have an amendment.
You do.
It is the A090038 amendment, and I'd like to move that to have the bill in the state I'd like to forward, if you would, please.
Representative Norton, I don't see it in my packet. Do members have that?
No.
It was on the rail, and I had to. It wasn't in mine. I thought I was probably the only one that didn't get it. And
let's get a second to pass that out,
okay.
Then.
I've got it. Thank you.
And members, while we're doing that, let me just explain how I want to proceed here. I don't want to rush votes here. We are scheduled to adjourn at 10 o'clock, and it's my intention to do that. If we're not ready to vote at that point, then we will lay this bill over and pick it up at our next committee hearing. I want to make sure the members are knowledgeable and comfortable with what's being proposed. And even though this bill, in a similar form, was passed through here last biennium, and we have a number of members who are new to the legislature, and I think it's important that they have full knowledge and awareness of their vote. And so I want to be able to honor that. What I do want to do is make sure that we get through all your testimony today. You have some special visitors. I want to make sure that we allow them time to share their thoughts and hopefully at least have some question and answer between them and committee members. One very quick note, members. We started at 8:40. We are scheduled to begin the committee at 8:30. The chair was certainly here at 8:30 to start us. I needed to wait for a quorum because we can't move bills without them. So I would really urge your diligence in terms of helping us get to quorum at 8:30. With that, Representative Norton, you have the AO90038 amendment, and you, and so you will be moving that amendment at this point.
Yes, sir.
All right. Very well. Perhaps you can explain the amendment quickly.
The amendment simply adds, and it was an oversight at the revisor's office, when available, a school district must post its wellness policy on the website. It does allow passage for those that may not have a website or advanced technology at this point, sir.
Very well. So this, in essence, puts the bill in the form that you wanted before us at this point.
It does
point.
Indeed.
Members, any questions? If not, all in favor of the Norton motion to adopt the 0038 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Very well. Representative Norton, House File 439 is amended as before us.
Thank you. thank you. And I'm going to talk fast. I do have some prepared statements, but I do want you to hear from the testifiers. And then, as was stated, we can get back to my comments. I do want to say that Representative Detmer is here with me. He also supports this, and I appreciate him being here. We have a nice bipartisan support of a very important bill.
Welcome back, Representative Detmer. There are available seats here at any time. So.
Thank you. I'm just living proof that fitness is a nonpartisan issue here.
Indeed.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm pleased to forward this important issue for your consideration this morning. In my years as a child advocate in the areas of education and children's health, I've spent countless hours on the issue of childhood obesity, improved levels of physical activity for our youth, and improved vending and nutrition options for children in our schools. We've made great progress in many of these areas, but there is one area where we have taken a step backwards, and that area is with physical education standards and expectations in our K-12 schools. Obesity is a growing problem in Minnesota. Nearly a quarter of Minnesotans are currently obese. 63% of Minnesotans are overweight or obese. Minnesota has done a lot already to reverse this trend. Last year, the legislature passed the SHIP program in our health care reform bill to tackle obesity through local public health strategies. The CDC provided Minnesota with a $600,000 grant to embark on a plan to address this very issue. And we're going to hear some testimony today that I hope will reinforce the need for standards and in our schools, and also the link to academic achievement. In your handouts, there's a report from the Department of Health and Blue Cross Blue Shield in support of this and points out some of the statistics with regard to the cost of obesity in our schools, and I would encourage you to look at those. I'm going to really briefly outline the bill. There are three components. The first is required standards. We're only one of three states that do not have statewide standards, and this bill moves from a locally identified standard to asking districts to choose between either the state QTN or the national NASPE standard. Studies show that increased physical fitness is associated with higher levels of achievement and reduced obesity as they become adults. It also, the second component, is that it sets a 0.5 graduation requirement for physical education in our 9 through 12 in our high school. And the third is the amendment that we just passed, which addresses posting of the wellness policy on district websites for easy access to family and community. As was mentioned by the chair, this bill was passed in the last biennium and unfortunately suffered a veto as part of the K-12 policy omnibus bill. It has always been my belief that our schools, when acting in local parentis, should be the role model for not only academics but social and nutritional standards. This bill will ensure that physical activity will remain a staple in our children's lives through improving their health, education, and their general well-being. And with those comments, Mr. Chair, I would like to ask Mr. Detmer if he has anything quickly to say and then move to our speaker.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and committee members, this bill was presented last year. I supported Representative Ward as he brought this bill through the various committees. I believe it went through all the committees and all the way up to the conference committee. And first of all, a little bit background. I've been a physical education teacher for 34 years, teaching outdoor education, strength training, and physical education. I'm also a master fitness trainer with the United States Army Reserve. And one thing I've always noticed when I develop fitness programs for my students or for people in the military, I always look at the five components of fitness, and that is muscular strength, muscular endurance, flexibility, cardiovascular endurance, and also body composition. And it was also pointed out in terms of the obesity problem that we have, not only in our young people, but adults, the same. The things that I've noticed over the years is some of our benefits that we get from being physically fit. And research shows that even moderate exercise will help enhance our brain. Another area is it improves our ability to learn. I look at my students when they would come in to my classes. I think some of the best time to take physical fitness classes is right away in the morning. It stimulates, it gets the blood flowing, and also increases our ability to learn. Also reduces stress. And it might behoove us as legislators maybe to exercise in the morning before we get here based on the economic environment that we're working in to get a little exercise before we start our daily routine here at the state capitol. Another area is it reduces anxiety without the use of drugs. It also helps stem off any problems or memory loss as we get older. You know, just a little exercise each day will help prevent memory loss that I've experienced. Helps improve their ability to focus and pay attention. I mean, as an educator,
that's one area that we really need to, are always trying to correct our students, is to pay attention to what we're saying. And a little exercise 3 to 4 times a week will help improve our being able to pay attention. And lastly, being in the military, I've watched a lot of these young people come into the military, and they are not physically fit to even start their training. We have to spend a lot of time getting them in shape before we can actually get them into the actual training. And so with that, I'm going to turn it back over. Thank you.
Thank you, Officer Detmer.
Yes.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record and give us your title.
Yes, I'm Dr. John Rady. I'm Associate Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School.
Welcome, Dr.
And I spent my career studying aggression, attention deficit disorder, and through that whole time, the benefits of exercise to treat mental and physical illnesses. I wrote a bunch of books, some of which you might be familiar with, including Driven to Distraction, which started the whole interest in attention deficit disorder. So your comments about exercise I've followed and we've lauded quite frequently. But I've written a recent book called Spark, the reason why I'm here. I've been spending the last 2 days talking to school districts in Minnetonka and Hopkins, to their faculty, to talk about the benefits of exercise. I've worked with a committee such as this in Massachusetts and Texas. Met with the new Department of Education at the federal level because I have collected the research that has been out there in the past, especially in the past 15 years, that have made it clear that exercise is one way to make our brains work better. You were talking about school attendance before. One of the things that we find as we go into the school system and introduce daily physical exercise, and I say physical exercise, not just ball sports, not an emphasis on athletics, that's an after-school activity, but on fitness and wellness, which is what's really important. We have to change that whole orientation in our PE classes. Also, what is shown from the suburbs to the inner city is the first thing that happens when you begin to exercise your children every day and vigorously, you show at the minimum drop in the first 3 to 4 months when this happens is a 50% drop in discipline problems. The maximum was a school down in Charleston, South Carolina, where they had one PE teacher, one gymnasium, 125 kids, inner city kids, worked 8th grade. They started a program in the morning, as you suggest, 30 minutes, not much equipment, not much money. The first 4 months, there was an 83% drop in discipline problems and a 70% drop in days of suspension. Plus, what we know from all the research that we've done is that it does improve attention, it does improve time spent on tasks, it does improve the ability to sit through problems and struggle with them. It helps relieve this syndrome called learned helplessness, where kids give up after a time. And I can show you many, many slides, which I can talk for 2 days, about how exercise improves class morale, class identification with the classroom, with their school. One of the things that is found again, whether it's in the suburbs or the inner city, is attendance goes way up. And the more vigorous the physical education is, or the fitness demands are, the better the results. There's a school system in Kansas City that started this program in an elementary school in the inner city that had PE once a week. They changed it to the 5 times a week based on purely on fitness, not on ball playing, not on skill building. In the first year, they had a 63% drop in aggressive incidences, and they then it became viral. and now 60% of the schools in Kansas City, from K through 8, have daily PE, and the plan is to go to 100%. Some of them are allowing it to go into the high school, which is, I think, so ill-advised to drop it then. There's a school system in Naperville, Illinois, that started me off on this, where they have 19,000 kids in this school system. They have PE based on fitness every day. They've evolved this program over 17 years. 3% of their children are overweight. There's not an obese kid. There's a college that went in to look for an obese kid in all their schools, couldn't find one 2 years ago. Not one obese child. And what's most important about it, I think, is that they lobbied to take the International Science and Math Test, you know, the TIMSS test, have you all heard of that, where we compete yearly, every 3-4 years with other countries, and the U.S. is always about 10th or 12th in the world, and Singapore, Hong Kong, and Taiwan are in the top 5. Naperville lobbied to take it as a country. 98% of their kids took the test. They came in number 1 in the world in science and number 6 in math. Now, and this is a school where these kids are monitored. They're moving 45 minutes a day at a very high pitch rate. And other schools have copied this. It's entering all over the country. Other programs have been developed that are similar. But the more we do with physical education and get our kids moving, the not only the smarter they are, the more well-behaved, the more energy they have, and I can go into all the research as to what happens, because since 1995, when we boomers started to worry about cognitive decline and Alzheimer's disease, we've learned so much about how exercise affects the brain. Just one statistic, for instance, if you are in middle age and you are not an exerciser, you begin 4 times a week, you will push back the onset of cognitive decline by 10 to 15 years. And you will cut the possibilities of you developing Alzheimer's in half. And the same thing happens with our kids. I can slide here. Basically, this is to show you the ravages of obesity.
Dr. Rainey, while you're looking for that, I just want to give a heads up to Representative Norton and Representative Detmer that we're about 50 minutes away from the journey.
Yeah.
And I know you've got several other testifiers as well. Yeah. So I just want
But once I let Greg talk, no one else will talk.
Thank you, Dr. Rainey.
I don't want to bore you with that. But look, the green column here, this is in the Journal of Pediatrics 2 years ago. The green column represents 18 children that are morbidly obese before the age of 4. They follow them through their adolescent years. Their average IQ was 78, mentally retarded range. They looked at their 24 of their siblings who weren't obese before the age of 4. Their average IQ was 106. Now, the usual scatter is 5 to 10 points. In a family. So obesity has played ravages on our brains, and we know that. Now we call Alzheimer's disease type 3 diabetes because of the obesity leading to this. So not only do we have an obesity epidemic, but we have a diabetes epidemic in the elderly, in the middle age, and now in our kids. And a big part of that is not just that we're eating McDonald's all the time, but we're not moving. We are a sedentary culture, and we become more and more sedentary. And the schools have a responsibility to change that. And that's what I've been doing the past year, going around being a missionary, to try and get people to look at the problem and to look at the solution. And I can tell you where there hasn't been one school that where we've entered into where convincing them in a very simple way, it doesn't take a lot of money, to do it, to get their kids moving and keep them moving, that there's an improvement. There's an improvement that El Paso, Texas, one of the worst problem areas in the country. They went in with a very intense program 4 years ago. Now, 1 through 8, where they have this program, the kids all attend school. They don't have the dropouts. Unfortunately, they didn't continue it into the high school, and then they begin to see the decline in people leaving school. So we have all kinds of models and evidence to show that this has such a great effect on kids now and in the future.
Thank you, Dr. Rady. We appreciate your missionary work here in Minnesota. And next, I believe, is Mr. LeMond. This is indeed a privilege. You're one of the main reasons why I got hooked on to the Tour de France, watching that. I should tell you, as a young child, I read the story of the famous, is it Eddie Bix?
Pardon?
The story of Eddie Bix. Eddie B?
Yeah, my Polish coach that defected from the Olympics in 76.
I think an older gentleman, but maybe I'm confusing with someone else. As a young child, I wanted to cycle in the Tour de France.
Well, Eddie Merckx?
Eddie Merckx, yes.
Indeed. Eddie Merckx, yeah, he's probably the greatest of all time.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed. And then
my hero in his
then I circled back when you were our sort of American champion at the Tour de France. It's a real pleasure to have you here today.
That was an exciting time in my life, but now I'm 47 years old and lead poisoning and kind of a little overweight, but I'm passionate about exercise and I'm passionate about, I'm on the tour, spokesman for the Tour de Cure for American Diabetes Association, and I mean, you know, my, just what I see and really, when Dr. Rady, actually I met his co-author in France, in the middle of France, and he told me that Dr. Rady is doing actually had 6 of his books already. I don't remember authors, so. And he said he's doing a book on the benefits of aerobic exercise. I'm like, hold on, I got to talk to him. Too much of a good thing is really bad, too. Most high-level pro sports like cycling, triathletes, marathons also suffer from depression, and it's a stress hormone that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
But when I wrote him a letter, it was like we were on the same page, and that's why we just feed off each other. But when I read Spark, the rough draft, it was like just statistics that I've picked up over the years myself, but he had condensed it all into, it was like, but the Denmark study where they, another cyclist from Minnesota has lived over there, he implemented a 5-day vigorous exercise where you have to get your heart rate, it's not just about walking, it's about getting your aerobic, kind of like little intervals, little sprints. It does all these chemical changes in the brain, neurotransmitters, and if you think about today's kids, especially in Minnesota, sunlight produces serotonin. And my kids go from indoors to indoors to indoors for 4 months. And, you know, since 1990, Ritalin, Prozac, Zoloft, it's been highly prescribed, and the drug companies love it because, you know, there's a pill for every cure. And really, when I hear about education reform, you could have the best schools in the world, and if your kids can't pay attention, their brains are asleep, they're not going to absorb what they need to. And I think that's what Dr. Ray's studies have shown, that not changing academics, but changing the way they exercise. When they exercise, they get a 30% jump in brain function. It's the world's GPA and SATs went up 20-25% on average, with no change in academics. Teachers are teaching well enough, the kids can't pay attention. I'm a perfect example. I was a ADD kid that bounced off the wall. I said my 5th grade teacher, I got into cycling, won the national championships, probably at 9th grade, and I ran into her at 7-Eleven. I'm from Reno. I chose Minnesota for my choice because I love the state. And she started crying. And she said, I'm so glad you found cycling because I thought you're going to be in prison. That's how ADD I was. And it was only when I started exercising where my brain really started functioning. Mm-hmm. And had I had, if schools had this knowledge, it would have made a huge difference. I looked at, you know, the science, my wish is that the science would be implemented into schools. And circadian rhythms,
students have a different time clock. Starting in school at 8 o'clock, their brains aren't even ready to exercise, mm-hmm. To study. Starting at 8 o'clock with a nice, vigorous one-hour workout charges the brain. They're ready, and it lasts for 4 or 5 hours. And I always look at it, I'd rather have an employee work 5 hours and have high productivity and be happy than work 8 hours and mediocre productivity. And I think it's really essential to get a good program in. And one way, I think, you look at funding, we have Lifetime Fitness here, we got all these gyms, we have all these coaches. You know, there's got to be a way to tie that in for the schools where there's not a huge cost. Those kids that go to, if Baram, who owns Lifetime Fitness, could work out a school program, those guys can be his clients down the road. And with very little cost, you can implement something. It just takes somebody to actually put the program together. And I think it's vital. The cost of, you know, you got broken homes, kids don't have really a refuge to go to, school becomes that refuge. And I think the Naperville study, it was not a choice. It was a mandatory class. And it's, you know, you have mandatory history. We're talking about writing a book, an academic book for school, teaching kids to understand physiology, what it does to the brain, the body. Because when you start exercising, you start tying that in, you start understanding, you go, it's great. And literally after about 6 weeks, you get people in the right type of intensity. They get addicted. The brain gets addicted to exercise. And as his study showed, not only did he hear a story about an 8-year-old kid in Florida, the second time he was arrested for driving to school. And he's driving to school to go exercise. That's how much it meant to him. And really, it's like it improves self-esteem. And my kids are probably their worst example because I did a lot of sports, and I always did. They refused to do it. And my kids had anxiety, ADD problems. And I could, as a parent, every parent here knows that it's really hard to tell your kids exercise if you're not doing it. When you take that away from the parents, and it's a school, they come back feeling better. There's no conflict with the parents. And you'll see an incredible, you know, rise in IQ jumps, but GPA and SAT scores. And you guys have, we got great educators here. It's just, how's the brain function going into it? So it's been an honor to be here. And I said, not from here, but I've lived here since 87. I can live anywhere. And I love Minnesota, and I think we're so far in advance in thinking and education, and we could have the state be the leader and example for the rest of the nation. So,
thank you.
It's an honor to be here.
Thank you, Mr. Lamont. It's an honor to count you as a Minnesotan. We have Mr. Jack Alwell, who's traveled here from Farmington, not too far, but far enough, as well as Dr. Steve Geis. I hope I said that correct, also from Farmington. So I want to make sure we get your testimonies in. Thank you for being with us here this morning. We are about 3 minutes away from our formal ending time. Members, we did start late. I would ask that you please hang around for a few more minutes to make sure that you hear this important testimony.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is your intent to go to a vote today or so late?
It is not my intent to go to a vote today.
Thank you.
We will be laying this bill over. I want to make sure we have some careful deliberation of the bill itself. Please proceed. State your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jack Alwell, and I am from Farmington, Minnesota. I teach elementary school for the last 31 years, physical educator. And I'm here in support of this bill, which I know you know guarantees statewide PE standards and, more importantly, graduation requirements. And I think the bill might be better termed as No Child Left on Their Behind, which is something that we in the field tend to want to see. I look at this legislation as our first offensive in the war against inactivity for our children's health. As history demonstrates, a war without the full support of its leadership cannot be won. Myself and countless other foot soldiers or practitioners look hopefully to you. But I bring news of battles that have been won. And the first example would be the one that has taken place at North Trail Elementary School. The last three winter quarters at North Trail, a class known as Literacy PE, and I think you have handouts, or at least they're available, has been conducted at the start of each school day. This is a voluntary class for struggling fourth and fifth grade readers. They've been identified as below grade level by the NWEA standardized MAP test. And each session was only 15 minutes in length and immediately preceded their normally scheduled reading class. The important component is that it involves vigorous activities and games embedded with reading components. In order to succeed, the student had not only to give a full physical effort, but also to unravel or solve varied cognitive challenges. The results have been stunning. In late January, following the 9-week class, students were again administered the NWEA test. Lit PE participants showed an average increase of 5 times the national average in reading. And more to the point, they improved at 3 times the rate of their peers, other District 192 fourth and fifth graders, and almost twice the Title I average. It was so successful that our middle school principal implemented the same program and got the same results with sixth graders. But in this era of academic accountability and fiscal constraints, it's difficult to argue for increased physical education time solely on the basis that it lengthens and adds quality to life. Since standardized test scores are the gold standard in education, it became our desire to demonstrate the relevancy of physical education in this arena as well. For many years running, North Trail Elementary has had the highest standardized scores of the 4 elementary schools in Farmington. And this is not just for the upper grade levels, it's for reading and math and for 2nd grade through 5th grade. But it's not just that, because we don't always test at the very top at the beginning of the school year. We sometimes test in the middle or near the bottom. But we end up testing at the top at the end of the school year, and in fact at the end of the winter quarter already. And not only that, but we make the greatest gains from during the testing period. And I believe the research is making a strong case, and local research also, that daily physical education makes a difference. One of the unique features about North Trail Elementary is that we have everyday physical education for 25 minutes. The other district schools have only 2 days a week. And I believe that daily physical education has done more than just increase our academic scores, but I believe it also has changed the culture in the school. We have tried to create a model that's very enjoyable and very vigorous, and since we instituted this early morning class, our teachers have been giving some feedback. They apparently, when the kids get ready to go to this class, other kids try to line up and go with them and are unable, and I've had other students that have come to me and said, Mr. Alwell, what do I need to do to get into this class? And of course, we all know the answer to that, and just get worse test scores and you're in. But since our staffing levels did not increase, our class sizes had to, and so that's another thing that's a little different about our model. Curriculum was rewritten and implemented to focus on maximizing vigorous activity through less traditional ways. Gone were the majority of the team sports, replaced by individual, dual, and small group activities. A smorgasbord of games and challenges designed to give our students what Randy Pausch in the last lecture described as a head fake. That is, students who are enthusiastically engaged in fun, vigorous activities are unaware that other more important objectives are being met. Fitness levels are being raised, knowledge and skills are being acquired, and habits are being formed. The linchpin of this successful program is self-motivation, that is, the eager participation of the students. When lessons are engaging, fun, and challenging, students will strive to achieve a standard of both skill and behavior. And I'd like to close by saying that shortly before he died at age 63, Mickey Mantle, who was a childhood idol of mine, he said this. He said, if I'd have known I was going to live this long, I'd have taken a lot better care of myself. And his amusing remarks kind of lead us to the unsettling truth that we all face, and that is what we do now determines in large part the length and quality of our lives. Physical educators know that the habits, both good and bad, formed by today's young people will likely last into adulthood. Bad habits die a slow death, while good habits require training. And that's what this legislation is for. It's to require the training necessary to change the habits of our children. Thank you very much for hearing me.
Thank you for your wonderful testimony, Dr. Geitz. We'll have about 3 or 4 minutes. I apologize for that, but I do want to make sure we get your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll keep it short. Just here to say in support of the bill that I went to Naperville, that Mr. Alwell asked me to go when he was doing research on this program, the PE lit in the morning. And just magical what's taking place there. And it's the same thing that's taking place at North Trail Elementary. that Jack has PE offered every day for over 650 of our students, and it works. That the students' scores, their engagement, the attendance rate, all the things that you heard, the obesity rate, we're less than 5% in our student population. So all those things, by having students' engagement in the gym, is just magical. And so to see that in all the schools would be absolutely wonderful. And I used to be a secondary principal. And at my secondary building, it was an 8-9 building, and I had 4 full-time PE instructors. And that the students there, it was the same way. However, in this day of, you know, accountability, I like to say more so priority. And that we've made it a priority at North Trail to make PE every day. And it pays its benefits.
Thank you, Dr. Guy. Gentlemen, thank you for your wonderful testimony. I'm wondering if, Dr. Rainey, we can prevail on you to perhaps provide your slides, a presentation. I can distribute it to the committee members.
Oh, I'd love to.
Wonderful. Thank you for your visit here. Thank you all for your testimony. Representative Norton, very quickly.
Yes, and just because we're not going to be able to have these experts here tomorrow when we take this back up for the vote, I would encourage any of you that do have questions to one of these experts to get them to me today, and I'll forward them on and see if I can't get a response, at least in writing, for you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Representative Norton. Members, so we will lay this bill over for consideration. The chair is intent to take this up again tomorrow when we meet. And until then, this committee is adjourned.